I'm Lisa Prather, and welcome to The Voice of Health with our host, Dr. Robert Prather of Holistic Integration, where lives are changed every day through the natural approach to healthcare.
Simone received her second dose of the Moderna vaccine May 1st. On May 16th, her heart stopped. Her parents are still trying to understand what happened. 19-year-old Simone Scott was excited to get her second dose of Moderna's COVID vaccine. Now her mother, Valerie Kramer, is arranging her funeral. Simone, a first-year student at Northwestern University, suffered a case of apparent myocarditis-induced heart failure on Sunday, May 16. Despite extraordinary measures to save her, including a heart transplant, she died Friday morning at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in downtown Chicago. Now her mother and father are struggling to understand what happened to their daughter and why they had no idea that the vaccines might be anything but safe. "I lost my only daughter," Kramer said in an interview Sunday night. "I never thought I'd have to give up my daughter for the greater good of society." Unfortunately, doctors appeared to have repeatedly missed signals as Simone's condition slowly worsened in the 2 weeks following her second shot, before she abruptly crashed. In mid-May, Israel, which had vaccinated more of its population with RNA vaccines than any other country, was reporting high rates of cases of vaccine-related myocarditis in young people. But in the United States, vaccinations had just been opened for 12 to 15-year-olds, and the Centers for Disease Control was still playing down the myocarditis risk in young people. In a statement, May 17th, the day after Simone died, the CDC reported that it had found relatively few reports of myocarditis to date, that most cases appear to be mild, and that rates of myocarditis reports after vaccinations have not differed from expected baseline rates. Simone's physicians still have not confirmed to her parents that her vaccine caused her heart failure. But despite nearly a month of intense investigation, including a pathological examination of her heart, which was removed in the transplant, they have offered no other explanation. "My fear is that we'll never know what happened to Simone," her father Kevin Scott said Sunday night. "The vaccine is a coincidence that is too big to ignore." "I do suspect it was the vaccine," Kramer said. "If it wasn't direct, it played a role." Simone had been a healthy and driven young woman. Her only notable illnesses, pneumonia when she was an infant, and a second in high school. She told her mother in sixth grade that she wanted to go to Northwestern, and 6 years later, she applied early to the university and was accepted. Her Twitter account features a picture of her smiling widely and wearing a black Northwestern sweatshirt with the tweet, "When you get into your dream school." "She was a very goal-oriented person," Kramer said. "She was very, very disciplined." That discipline extended to her attitude toward COVID. She always wore masks and followed Northwestern's sometimes erroneous rules without testing when the school allowed its first-year students on campus in January. "Despite its COVID restrictions, the school was everything she hoped," her mother said. She produced stories for the school's in-house television network and quickly made friends. "She was a wildcat," the Northwestern mascot, through and through, Kramer said. "She bled purple." And when Illinois opened vaccinations to younger people, she quickly made an appointment to get hers. "She took it upon herself to get vaccinated," Kevin Scott said. "But she suffered serious short-term side effects after her first Moderna dose on April 3rd. And never fully recovered," her parents said. Throughout the month of April, she had a cough and stuffy nose and felt fatigued. Simone checked in with her mother, who lived outside Cincinnati, nearly every day, and Valerie encouraged her to go to a doctor. But neither Simone nor her mother ever considered whether the vaccine might be behind her symptoms, Kramer said. "We thought it was either allergies or a sinus infection." So on May 1st, as scheduled, Simone received her second vaccination. This time, she had fewer immediate side effects. But when she flew home to surprise her mother for Mother's Day, Sunday, May 9th, Kramer noticed she seemed tired, and she told her mother she had repeated nosebleeds. Kramer told her she needed to make an appointment with a doctor. Back in Illinois on Wednesday, May 12th, she did, but the visit was virtual and Simone forgot to mention that she'd noticed swelling the day before in her lymph nodes. The physician told her she probably had allergies. The next day, she had a low fever and went to Northwestern Student Health Clinic. Tests for mono, influenza, SARS-CoV-2, and other viruses were negative. A doctor noted Simone's heartbeat was irregular, but discharged her, telling her she should go to the emergency room if the problem worsened, Kramer said. The following day, she added a sore throat to her list of symptoms and went back to the health clinic. By now, Kramer was concerned enough to insist on having Simone FaceTime the visit. She was told she might have a viral infection, given an antiviral prescription, and again sent home. By Friday night, she was suffering severe fatigue. Still, her parents assumed she was simply run down and sick, especially since she had now been seen 3 times in 3 days. People do get sick, and you get some rest, and you sleep, and you get through it, Kramer said. That changed on Sunday, May 16th. Simone texted her father she was too dizzy to get out of bed or eat. Now seriously concerned, her parents decided to take action. Her mother packed a bag and began the drive from Ohio to Illinois, while her father contacted Northwestern's campus police and asked them to check on her. After initially refusing, the police eventually did. When Valerie Kramer arrived at North Shore Hospital in Evanston on Sunday night, she was escorted into a waiting room. "That's when I knew things were not right," she said. A doctor appeared, telling her that her daughter had gone into heart failure as she was being transported to the hospital and needed immediate surgery. They said her heart was not functioning and they need to insert a balloon pump to get it working, but the surgery failed. The next day, Simone was placed on a heart-lung bypass. Nearly a month of increasingly desperate medical procedures followed. On May 20th, with a transplant looming, she was moved to Northwestern Memorial, the university's primary teaching hospital and among the top medical centers nationally. Simone had a breathing tube and was sedated most of the time, but occasionally doctors lightened the sedation enough for her to text her parents. "Am I going home with you?" she asked. On Sunday, May 23rd, Simone's physicians told her parents that her heart did not seem to be recovering on its own and a transplant was her best option. "We didn't have much choice," Kramer said. She had the transplant that night and nearly died at least once. Ultimately, her new heart did begin to pump, but her lungs had been severely damaged, and the immunosuppressive drugs necessary for her to avoid rejecting the transplant led to a severe lung infection. After a few hopeful days, her prognosis dimmed. Her parents never lost hope, but on the morning of Friday, June 11th, her doctors told them that they could no longer control her blood pressure and that they should come to say goodbye. "We just all sat there and we watched and held her hand and rubbed her feet and we had the chaplain come," Kramer said. At 11:19 a.m., Simone Scott died. She was 19. Kramer and Kevin Scott repeatedly asked whether the hospital intended to report Simone's case to VAERS, the federal system to report vaccine side effects. Doctors did not seem particularly interested in doing so for most of the time Simone was there, Kramer said. "We kept asking if they did, and nobody could tell us if they did," Kramer said. "It was just a runaround." Finally, the day before Simone died, a physician's assistant promised to report the case. With their daughter gone, Kramer and Kevin Scott are now hoping that their story will, at the least, raise awareness of the potential risk of vaccines. "I never knew that there was a risk for something as serious as this," Kramer said. "I would have wanted to know." In the meantime, they are left to mourn the loss of her only child. On May 12th, 4 days before Simone collapsed, Northwestern required all its students, with very limited exceptions, to be vaccinated for the fall 2021 term.
The Voice of Health Wellness Tip featuring rapid release technology.
One of the chiropractic friends who is a soft tissue expert, his textbook, Soft Tissue Therapy, is the one used in medical schools, heavily used as sort of the Bible for soft tissue work. And as soon as he saw rapid release, he switched all of his treatments over to the rapid release because it's much easier on the doctor. You get quicker results, less painful, much better compliance. So when people would be coming in for the grass and they would be going, I like the results, but I don't know if I really want to do that. Whereas with rapid release, they come running in and really want that done.
Because yeah, they ask like, for it.
Yeah, they're like, okay, we got you cured, but can I have it again anyway?
Well, many patients have bought them.
It's an amazing device and incredible results. It's a great way to get your body relaxed and get those aches and pains out of your system.
As you're using the rapid release, you can see people go into that deep breathing and going more into that, what we call the parasympathetic mode or the rest and digest.
Really switches and has a huge effect on the nervous system.
And the sessions aren't long. You just do a few minutes in each area.
One of the patients recently with a massage therapist, so she was doing a massage on him. She's going, boy, I'm just having trouble really getting this released. I walked out, got the rapid release, and she did it. And the patient was like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. And she was saying, you know, I got to use that more. To get those problem areas, it works so much quicker, so much easier. It just takes off all the stress of me trying to really work that out. And it's easier on the patient too.
Relax muscles and release aches, pains, and tension through Rapid Release's high-speed vibration therapy. Experience the benefits of Rapid Release therapy by scheduling an appointment at Holistic Integration. And to purchase your own, go to our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. Click on the Rapid Release banner and enter code PRATHER, P-R-A-T-H-E-R, for a $100 discount for the Voice of Health Radio listeners. You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of Holistic Integration, the most comprehensive wellness center in the Midwest.
Dr. Prather, we just shared Simone's
very,
very sad story. It's hard for me to get through that. Myocarditis-induced heart failure. So how many cases of heart inflammation caused by the COVID-19 shots have been confirmed by the CDC?
Well, interestingly enough, the CDC actually met for an emergency meeting to go over the risk for the heart inflammation cases, because this has made a significant impact on people's concerns. So they did have that meeting, and they did come out and say that they have 323 cases that are verified as heart inflammation from the vaccination. So it is absolutely confirmed that vaccinations can cause heart inflammation. They did put down that 295 of them were discharged and sent home after going into the hospital. So these were people who were hospitalized. 14 weren't actually hospitalized. 9 are actually at this time hospitalized, and they don't know the outcome. Now, they say that on the confirmed cases on this, they haven't gone through all of them because there's actually quite a few other cases that have come through. And the ones that they've looked at and that they've investigated at this time, they don't have any confirmed deaths from the vaccination. But, of course, they haven't gone through everything, and I'm sure that they haven't looked at Simone's yet. 5 cases they have no data on. So they don't seem to be too concerned about this. But again, you know, a lot of people are not, the confidence in our system right now is actually pretty low. And the confidence in the CDC, which is actually has been the most respected organization on health in the world, there has been some doubts on if there's an agenda, if there's something going on. One of the things that we really need, and what they were trying to do, is get some transparency here. There is some acknowledgement that this is a problem. The Israeli government actually has been moving on this and saying that this is a real problem. And they have a lot more cases that they have confirmed that have been caused by this. So this is something that definitely needs to be at least aware, and people need to be concerned about this. And interestingly enough, one of the things is that the people who had the COVID-19 confirmed, they are more susceptible to the side effects. What's interesting is the people who are actually showing up with the heart inflammation are people between the ages of 12 through 39, and more common in men than in females.
So as young as 12.
As young as 12. They have had cases as young as 12 who've had the vaccination. And it doesn't seem to be older people. It seems to be younger people that are at risk for this. Now, what's interesting is that these are the people who aren't as much of a risk for the COVID-19 virus.
Right.
Very few problems are actually developing along these lines in these people. The question becomes, is the vaccination for this group of people more of a risk than the actual virus? So that's the big question that they're actually trying to answer.
Now, which of the vaccines have they found can cause heart inflammation?
Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson all have the issues. And it's usually the second dose that really seems to be when that kicks off. When we were talking about Simone, she had a lot of negative reactions at the beginning, and that should be kind of a warning sign. Now, one of the things that they have talked about that they haven't actually done yet is reducing the dose of the vaccination in half.
You've talked about that.
And that's really something that I wish that for the younger people, if they're going to require them to get it, that they don't give the full dose, but go with a half dose. Much safer, much less problems, and actually shows up more effective for young people than the higher dose. So why we haven't switched to this, I don't know, but you know how government can be.
Can COVID-19 infection cause heart inflammation?
Yes, actually that is one thing that they have said, is that there have been cases along those lines. Matter of fact, we've actually treated cases with COVID-19 with heart inflammation. So that is something that can be a problem. But the question becomes, is there more cases with the vaccination or with the virus itself? That's one of the things that they keep on saying, well, the vaccine is safer than the virus. But, you know, we really need to be transparent on that. We need to have a much stricter requirement for reporting. That has now become on the warning labels, that is one thing that it can actually occur. If a physician doesn't report it, that's actually illegal, and that's actually a criminal offense.
Well, that was interesting in her story. They couldn't get them to report it to VAERS.
Yes, and one of the things is because that wasn't on the warning label. It is now. And if they don't report it, that's actually illegal. And as a citizen, or if you actually have a negative reaction, or someone that you know or love, you can actually report it without the physician. And you can actually report the physician for not reporting it. And that is actually a criminal offense, not to report a situation like that. So you can actually point that out to your physician. Hey, that's a criminal offense. You have to report this.
Right.
And especially now with it being listed on there, that is completely a criminal offense not to report it.
So what are the three types of heart inflammation?
Myocarditis, pericarditis, and endocarditis. Myo is muscle, peri is a pericardium, that's the sac around the heart. And then you also have endocarditis, which is the lining of the walls. And each one of them can have a different type of treatment and different types of symptoms. But those are the things that we look out for.
And what are the symptoms of heart inflammation?
And these are the things that people need to be aware of. Chest pain, chest pressure, shortness of breath, fatigue, heart palpitations, lightheadedness, swelling in hands, legs, ankles, and feet, or sudden loss of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that you need to be aware of.
And they kept mentioning with Simone the fatigue.
Fatigue is a huge type of thing.
Yeah.
If any of those symptoms come up, you need to go to your doctor immediately. And they will need to run some testing. Matter of fact, one of the things that I would actually recommend for people, if you have had the COVID-19, make sure that you get thorough blood tests. I would get an EKG just to see how it's doing. Mm-hmm. And after a vaccination, you should actually get some blood work done, make sure everything's okay, and probably get an EKG, make sure that there's no abnormalities.
Up next, we'll have Leah Wilson, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Stand for Health Freedom.
Listen to the Voice of Health Radio on your smartphone or tablet on all of the top radio apps available. TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. You can find these apps and more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is the Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. Laughter is the best medicine.
And one night the pain was so bad, I'm telling you, I told my wife, I said, you got to take me to the hospital. The Percocet's not making a dent in this. So she drops me off there at the emergency room and she goes to park the car. I walk up to the desk and the nurse said, so what's wrong with you? And I said, I have a kidney stone. And she kind of laughed. She goes, well, you're going to be waiting a long time tonight, hon. I said, no, ma'am, you don't understand. I said, I am in the worst pain of my life. She said, well, you just feel like you're going to die, but you're not. So I go in the waiting room. I sit down next to a guy that's got a knife in his head. He's got a knife sticking in his head. I'm like, oh, my God, were you in a fight? He said, no, I have a kidney stone. I did this to myself trying to get to the back there.
The Voice of Health Minute with Dr. Robert Prather of Holistic Integration.
My first experience with TMJ was a friend of mine who wasn't in chiropractic school that I knew down in Atlanta, and he had actually tried to commit suicide 3 times. It wasn't that there was something wrong with him in particular, but the jaw pain can get so bad that people will actually try to take their lives. And I was trying to find someone who actually knew what they were doing, but all the people that I found that were experts on it, he says, I've already been there. Mm-hmm. And I developed some techniques along those lines for adjusting and working with it and got him down to the point that it was very tolerable. And he says, I'm staying with you. You're the only one who's helped me. I still have modified it, made it actually better. But the same techniques that I have was the techniques that I actually used on him. I learned under fire. I was felt like I was under a lot of stress to figure that out and spent a lot of time working on it.
Schedule your appointment at Holistic Integration, 317-848-8048. Holistic Integration, restoring hope. Are you experiencing muscle pain or tightness anywhere on your body? Try the Rapid Release Therapy Pro 2. The Pro 2 is a targeted high-speed vibration therapy device used by medical professionals to quickly relieve a wide variety of aches and pains on their patients, as well as themselves, their friends, and their families. Safe, effective, and easy to use, this professional quality medical device uses a patent treatment head with 5 built-in heads, giving you the versatility to treat small bony surfaces such as fingers, wrists, and ankles. Powerful enough to quickly relax the tightest hips on professional athletes and everything in between. Unlike the low-speed percussive devices, rapid release therapy delivers for sensitive areas like joints, neck, and ankles safely and comfortably, and provides the raw power your larger muscle groups need. Go to our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. Click on the Rapid Release banner and enter code PRATHER for a $100 discount for the Voice of Health Radio listeners. I'm Lisa Prather, and you're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of Holistic Integration, where we get to the root cause of your health issue.
We have Leah Wilson with us, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Stand for Health Freedom. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you, Lisa. It's great to be here.
We are so glad to have you. And let's start with, what is Stand for Health Freedom?
Yes. So we are getting, you know, as natural health care providers, my husband and I own a clinic, and also as a nonprofit that speaks on health freedom issues, just so many questions about, can my employer really make me get the jab or lose my job? Can my university force me to do something with my body or threaten my ability to continue to get my education? You know, these are the types of questions we're hearing because health freedom is such a huge issue today. So as an organization, what we do is we give the individual a voice on these important matters, these matters that are extremely pressing to students, to employees, to community members right now. So Stand for Health Freedom exists to give the silent majority a voice on issues such as, number one, how we care for our bodies. Number two, how we care for our children's health. Number three, how we worship God with the care of our bodies. And then number four, how we can access our ability and the ease at which we can access the information to do each of those things. So what is the neat thing about Stand for Health Freedom is it doesn't matter what choices you make. You know, we have mothers who fully vaccinate their children, who partially vaccinate or don't vaccinate at all. And that's not what matters to be a member of Stand for Health Freedom or to take action on our action portal. It's each of us comes together because of one thing, and that's because we agree that the individual should be the one to decide how we care for our bodies and how we care for our children.
Mm-hmm. Now, why were you inspired to start Stand for Health Freedom?
Might I add that the reason these issues are so important is mm-hmm. because there is a pharmaceutical industry and a medical industry that is spending tens of billions of dollars a year to influence how we care for our bodies. And what is accepted as a culture, you know, is there only one way? Is it really the one size fits all model? And as a person who has lived a bit differently than that standard model for my whole life, it became readily apparent when we were foster parents that people were deceived as it relates to accessing information to make medical decisions or what is acceptable for medical decisions. And how this really manifested in my own life was we were foster parents. And when we went up for relicensure of our foster license in 2018, the state decided that we are no longer fit to be foster parents because we don't give our biological sons all 69 doses of the recommended vaccines that are currently on the schedule in Indiana. So I had gone to law school. I'm an attorney because of my passion for foster care kiddos. Mm-hmm. And I had left the practice of law to care for foster kids and be a foster mom and be active in our natural health clinic. And then when our license was removed because of our children being seen as a threat to foster kids, I said, okay, God, this is too big to let go and too big to fight. Where do we go from here? And that's how Stand for Health Freedom was birthed, but of me diving headfirst into educating the people in our community about what it means to make informed decisions for our children today, even though the CDC would like us to believe there's only one way and that we should turn over, you know, our agency as a mother to a doctor or to the government and how we care for our kids. But we do have choices, and it's important for moms to be empowered and to know that there are choices and then to be able to stand up and do something about that.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of moms involved in this Stand for Health Freedom and the leadership too. I noticed, went to the last meeting.
Yes.
In Greenfield.
We meet together in Indiana the second Tuesday evening of every month. And there are three women that show up consistently, you know, to be mm-hmm. there and help out. One of them being my sister, and then our social media executive assistant and her sister also come because they're passionate about this issue and mm-hmm. recognize that the moms that they know that have become health leaders in their own home mm-hmm. have been empowered at a whole new level, you know, when it comes to not only their own well-being, but the well-being of their entire household.
Mm-hmm. Mama bears, that's what I call them.
Yes, so good.
Uh-huh. Well, what issues are currently keeping people up at night in Indiana as it relates to health freedom? I know we have a lot going on in the university and the schools. I'm in Carmel. We live in Carmel, Hamilton mm-hmm. County. Even in the elementary school level, we're finding out.
So one of the things that I mentioned was people at the universities either being threatened to lose their jobs or to not be able to continue to pursue their education. And that is not only showing up at the university level, but in the hospital systems. And people think, okay, well, what can the healthcare workers do? What can the university students do? One thing we have to recognize is whatever happens at the university level and the healthcare level, that industry will be a blueprint for the rest of society. And so we currently have a campaign going asking our lawmakers to come back into session to close the loopholes that allow discrimination based on our healthcare decisions, based on what we do with our own health. You know, there a lot of people wonder, like, how can they force us to do things? We have a constitution. You know, the 14th Amendment says we should all have equal protection under the law. And the encouraging thing is that people are challenging this issue. Groups are coming together, and that's what it requires, is getting organized, unifying with a message. And we have a campaign in Indiana right now. If you text in, so if you have your messaging app up on your phone and you text the number 50457 with the word Hoosier, then you will get a link to take action on this campaign to say, hey, lawmakers, we needed you to pass a good law last session, and while you gave us something, there is a law in Indiana now that says the state and local governments cannot force the use of vaccine passports or cannot facilitate the use of vaccine passports. However, there's still way too much exposure and vulnerability for employees, for university students, for elementary school students, et cetera, that needs to be tightened up with where we are today, with people being living under constant fear of a virus, thinking that their neighbors might be a harm to them. Mm-hmm. All of these things we've been hearing on repeat for, 17 months now? I've mm-hmm. stopped counting. So that is one of the big issues in Indiana right now, is the treatment of the hospital workers and the university students. And we are all affected by this issue. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, how this issue is decided within those realms will affect each of us and will affect what we accept as Hoosiers. So take action on that campaign and share it with your friends and family, because the more of us that use our voice, and that it only takes 30 seconds to click, say how you're affected. It's always best to customize a message that's going to your lawmakers. But we have written that message there for you so that you can click and take action and share it with your friends and family.
It's nice because you do Stand for Health Freedom, get your emails. You make it very easy, you know, because we're busy people, and you make it very easy for us. So this was text 50457. Hoosier, and you'll get that information.
You'll get the link. And that is, you know, Lisa, that's our goal, is to make it easy for people mm-hmm. because the industry is educating our lawmakers at every level constantly. Mm-hmm. And we know that as men and women who have jobs and children and responsibilities in our community, that we don't have the luxury of showing up at the state house every day. Mm-hmm. And so how do we go on record and make ourselves count as a part of this larger voting block? And that's why the tools at Stand for Health Freedom exist, is so that you don't have to have the barrier of not enough time, the barrier of what do I say, what will they hear that actually matters, mm-hmm. who do I say it to, how do I contact them. So that message is pre-drafted for you, but we always encourage you to customize it. It's coming directly from you as a constituent, a voter, to that elected lawmaker, so that we can show them what their constituents care about.
Mm-hmm. So what can our listeners do about school guidelines?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
And I would have to say that that is an extremely emergent issue mm-hmm. because what we've gone through 3 semesters now under strict guidelines.
And school starts here in a couple months or
And
less.
Even our summer schools with these mm-hmm. hot days and outdoor adventures, we're seeing these guidelines are still in place. Even mm-hmm. though we found out very early in the declared emergency that our kids, A, are not at risk. They have a 99.9974% recovery rate. And they are not threatening the welfare of others either, because Pediatric Journal, several large studies coming out of China, these studies show that asymptomatic transmission from a child to an adult is not happening. What they have found with the data is that it is the adults that pass it to the children. The children deal with it very well. And what I've been telling moms is, you know what one of the biggest injustices is that we didn't take this opportunity to remind our children what a gift they are to their community, mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. survive this well. And they add to the protection in the community without being at risk and without putting their grandparents at risk. But yet we fall in prey to the idea that our children are a threat to the people that love them, to their teachers, to their classmates. And the data doesn't support it. Mm-hmm. And so we need our school administrators, our school owners, our school boards to step up and harness their fiduciary duties and say that we're going to lift the guidelines, because they don't make sense. They're unnecessary and they're extremely harmful. Mm-hmm. We see these moms walking in. One of my friends actually walked into the dermatologist's office last week. Her daughter had gotten kicked in the face. And then what do you know? She has a rash spreading her whole face. And the dermatologist says, oh, well, that's a bacterial site that formed from a mask being worn over her injury. And the moms, even well-knowing moms, thinking moms, don't connect the two things. She thinks, kick in the face, what, did her shoe have, you know, animal feces on it or something of that nature? Mm-hmm. No, it's the mask creating that bacterial site And if it's creating a bacterial site on the skin, I had another mom reach out to me last night. Two of her children who have never had issues with cavities, one has 15 cavities, one has 13 cavities. And so,
the bacteria.
Yes, so we know not only are the guidelines, the social distancing, the isolation of our children, not only are they unnecessary, they are harmful. So there is something you can do. This isn't meant to discourage you, but to empower you,
yes,
to create a new way within your own community. The first thing, that same text line. So you can text 50457 with the word kids first. So it's all one word, KIDSFIRST, 50457, kids first, and you'll get a link. And you're going to email Governor Holcomb and tell him that you expect these guidelines to be lifted immediately and for our kids to go back to school in 2021-2022 school year without COVID restrictions, because they're unnecessary and they're harmful. There's 100 ways we could slice this issue, but we have really drilled down and feel like our two primary messages right now are that they're unnecessary and they're harmful. And you can access all of our research and data and headlines and talking points on Stanford Health Freedom's website. When you go to the Kids First page, which you'll get by accessing that link, there's a presentation there that you can give to your community, that you can watch to educate yourself, to educate others. You can take it, you can use pieces of it for school board meetings. There's also a step-by-step guide for how you can form a community group to make a change in your community, which we're seeing that be effective across our state and other states. There were two moms in Iowa. I love telling this story because it's just a grand slam and it's empowering. Her daughter, one of the moms, her daughter got staph infection 3 times on her face from the masks. And so she finally said, I've had enough. We have to change something. So they started showing up at the school board meetings on March 23rd, 2021. And by May 20th, they had gotten enough attention on this issue that their governor signed into law, because their lawmakers passed a law, saying that forced masks will no longer be acceptable in Iowa.
And that was 8 weeks.
Yes, it's,
yeah, what you can get done.
Yes, and so don't regret waiting to connect the dots or waiting to take action, because I think the saying goes, the best time to take action was yesterday, but then the next best time is today.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just taking that first step today to start connecting with moms who share these concerns and to take these messages, these quality messages filled with passion and purpose, to the right people.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know even, and you have run a healthcare office, we were finding TMJ issues because of the mask, which cause it, you know, when you have TMJ issues, that can cause so many other things and just the stress of wearing them also. So I noticed, too, some schools are saying if the kids are vaccinated, they don't have to wear them. And if the kids aren't, they're going to have to wear them.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, the fact that we just went through how unnecessary these guidelines are, the government, the industry, the powers that be, whomever you want to talk about, they as being, would like to make you think that, oh, well, there's new information and keep your head on a swivel. However, it was unnecessary yesterday, it's unnecessary today, and it will be tomorrow, regardless of the availability of a pharmaceutical product. So just because this product is now available for use in the age group of 12 to 17 does not change what is necessary as a guideline. Why would we want to institute barriers to education or barriers to inclusion within our educational communities? How does that make sense? That's not what we stand for.
No.
You know, we need to wholeheartedly reject that, that these kids don't need to be isolated or segregated or create barriers to creating community for them in these developmental years, because it's unnecessary. The Department of Health in Indiana, I've sent a records request. I just revised it because they didn't like the first one I sent, to ask them, how did you come up with the guidelines that they put out? It was on June 7th. They put out guidelines that talk about exactly what you just referenced, treating vaccinated and unvaccinated children differently in our Indiana schools. Thank God it's just guidance. It's not an order. So the schools can reject it and say, no, that's not for us, without really much thought, because it hasn't come down as a health department order or a governor's executive order, but it's completely unacceptable, and we want to know how they came up with this guidance and make sure that Governor Holcomb is not going to adopt this guidance next school year.
Right, right. Okay, again, that's text 50457. Hit the link Kids First. It's what you want to text. All one word, no space, and hit the link for that.
Up next, more with Leah Wilson, Executive Director and co-founder of Stand for Health Freedom.
Never miss an episode of The Voice of Health so that you can stay informed and empowered about your health. Get a podcast of our show automatically delivered to you every week by signing up for our show on iTunes. You can find that link on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. And don't forget, thevoiceofhealthradio.com has complete archives of all of our past episodes with an audio library of information to help you add more life to your years and more years to your life. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.
The Voice of Health Wellness Tip with Dr. Robert Prather of Holistic Integration.
What are the effects of severe iodine deficiency?
If you have severe iodine deficiency, the thing that actually shows up is something called creatinism.
Doesn't sound good.
No. So what happens is you have an impaired physical and mental development. And usually that it's iodine deficiency in babies is the big thing that actually shows up. Because that's where iodine is very important in growth and in development. And if you don't have enough iodine, then that can actually cause a tremendous amount of problems. Matter of fact, the iodine levels in a mom as she's carrying the baby and in the first year or so in life is going to determine the IQ of the child.
Wow.
Why we like to do iodine levels on pregnant women and on women who are breastfeeding. Because that is a very important indicator and very important for the development of the baby. If you have severe iodine deficiency, you have permanent brain damage to the child where they are impaired and retarded. So retardation is one of the main things that happens if a child has severe iodine deficiency. Also, iodine goes into the muscle, and so you also have flabby muscles. You never have really muscle development. Iodine is also important to bone development, so you have abnormally formed bones, and they have a very slow metabolic rate and a very slow response time. It's not something that you would want to see in someone. That is severe iodine deficiency, but even where you have a little bit of deficiency, some of those things develop. So you don't have the muscle development, you don't have the skeletal development, you don't have the neurological development, they don't have a good endocrine system. So the whole system is actually underperforming. So making sure that iodine is present in the diet is absolutely essential to the proper development of a child, especially.
And you're talking about even when a woman's pregnant, or even before she gets pregnant, she should have it checked.
Oh, absolutely.
She's trying that to get pregnant.
That is one of the things that is absolutely essential. One of the big emphasis is folic acid, which we had been pushing for quite a while for folic acid to be recognized as something that needed to be supplemented, especially in pregnant women, because that was one of the major reasons on why birth defects were occurring. But the same is true of iodine. Iodine has a huge effect on the mental and physical development of a child. And so keeping up with that is absolutely important and can really make a big difference in how your child develops.
Schedule your appointment at Holistic Integration, 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. Don't stop. You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of Holistic Integration, where our mission is restoring hope to our patients.
We're continuing our conversation today with Leah Wilson, Executive Director and co-founder of Stand for Health Freedom.
Now, what can our listeners do about workplace and university discrimination? Because there's a lot going on. I saw in Tucker Carlson, the attorney, talking regarding Indiana University. So tell us what listeners can do about that.
Yes, it's important that we you know, really assess what our goals are first and foremost. I think that it's disorienting to people to come up against these types of decisions because it's the first time for many of us to have to make a decision between doing what we see best for our own health and with our own body and earning a living, et cetera. And so it's forcing us into a position of, whoa, this dynamic isn't right. So stepping back and saying, what is my goal? Is my goal to keep my job? Is my goal to get out of a hostile work environment? Is my goal to stay here because I feel that this is where I want to be but not get the jab? And so first identifying that and then recognizing what am I willing to do? So in the least, people can file an exemption. So you always ask for the policy first, whether it's a school, a university, a workplace, you ask for that policy. And you want to read it and see what it's requiring of you. And then you want to, if the policy doesn't make it clear what exemptions they're honoring, you want to ask them about what exemptions they are going to honor. Mm-hmm. It could be religious. It could be medical, although we're seeing that be extremely limited. It could be as broad as informed consent for some people that you're opting out. One thing that a lot of people don't realize is that religious freedom covers a lot more than your mind would allow you to believe.
Right. You had said something at the meeting about government is not our God.
Yes, the state mm-hmm. is not our God. Mm-hmm. And many people today have rejected the descriptor religious mm-hmm. because they've had a bad experience with religion, or they're turned off by the legalism that comes with religion. However, religious freedom is much broader than what you might think of in your day-to-day life. Even the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is a federal agency, even what they describe religion as is a personal belief with your own higher power, higher authority in your life, mm-hmm. whatever that is. They even say, I believe, I would have to pull up the definition, but I think that atheists and agnostics can still have religious freedom. Mm-hmm. And so your ability to abide by the dictates of your own conscience, to mm-hmm. walk forward in a way that you are at peace with in your soul, with whatever your higher authority is, doesn't require a pastor's note, doesn't require your formal religion to also agree with you, doesn't require you to have a religion at all. It's simply that you have a deeply held belief that cannot be fully explained within a textbook. Mm-hmm. It's not about a prescription for being healthy. It's about the care of your body. It's about the treatment of, some people use the aborted fetal cell lines, how they are very intertwined in the development and production of vaccines, mm-hmm. that goes against their deeply held beliefs. Or it could be that the use of animal products, perhaps that goes against your deeply held beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so there's a number of reasons why someone could harness their religious freedom to file an exemption if you have a deeply held belief that stops you from this practice that's being required of you. So ask for the policy, inform yourself on the exemptions, file an exemption. Even if they deny the exemption, appeal the exemption. Mm-hmm. In every step along the way, you're gathering more information about how you're going to be treated in this workplace. Mm-hmm. Is it somewhere where you want to continue to contribute your talents and your time and your energy? Mm-hmm. That's a question you have to ask. But it's also going to require us challenging these things. This is a season where we see things happening that we don't mm-hmm. think are right to lay the landscape for our children and grandchildren. And if we truly believe that this isn't the world we want our kids or grandchildren to believe in, mm-hmm. to live in, then it requires a challenge.
Mm-hmm. It does. You know, I had just heard, too, hospital in Texas just let go the people that wouldn't get vaccinated. I don't know how many, but I'm thinking, how is that going to change our health care? You know?
And that's a big thing that we are hearing from these policymakers, you know, private policymakers that are writing the policies for the hospitals, et cetera, mm-hmm. is we're not requiring this of you, but there will be consequences if you don't do it. Mm-hmm. It's such a backward wordsmithing. However, there's consequences for going along with this type of thing too. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're going to be short-staffed in our critical care units because mm-hmm. these healthcare workers, there have been statistics, research come out, surveys come out that say up to 40%, you know, of these healthcare workers don't want the COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so how will this affect the care that we can receive? How will this affect our economy, the division of society? Mm-hmm. So I agree. Yes, there are consequences to your actions. I wholeheartedly agree. But whether or not that's because you're forcing something upon someone's body or not is a different question.
Yeah. Well, just in conclusion, Leah, now people, you have your meetings the first Tuesday of every month. How can people get connected with that?
Yes, if you take action on either one of the campaigns we've talked about by texting 50457 with the word Hoosier or with the word Kids First or both, then you will automatically be subscribed to get our action alerts and our invitations to the Indiana meetings since mm-hmm. you have an Indiana address. Or you can just go to StandForHealthFreedom.com and join the movement that way. So by joining up, you will get the action alerts that are relevant to you mm-hmm. as an Indiana resident, and you will also get the invitations to those meetings. So watch for those to come out. We normally send them 2 weeks in advance, and then you'll have to RSVP so we know how many to expect.
And they're at different areas.
We've done them on the north side, south side, and east side so far, and it looks like in July we're going to be a little bit further north. So on the north side again, but just a little bit further north.
And what I'd like, too, is you broke up after the large meeting, and there's quite a few people there. It was exciting to see because you've just started this organization locally. When?
So we started meeting locally in October of 2020.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean,
so
we've
it's
had
exciting to see.
We've had like, what, 7 meetings now or something. Mm-hmm. And even at our first meeting, it was really something to see the response. People come out because they want validation mm-hmm. that they're not alone. They want community of people who are walking in the same direction as them, and they want to know what to do. Mm-hmm. And we really strive to provide those three things.
Yes, you did. I felt like I am with like-minded people. Yeah.
Yes, people who value freedom, people yes. who value taking care of their bodies, being the leader of their own household, caring for their children in the way they see fit. I remember our very first meeting, one woman walked in, her name's Kathy, and she said, "How many people do we have?" And at that point in time, it was back in October, we had around 3,000 Hoosiers taking action on our portal. And when I told her, she like almost cried because she was like, "Oh, I'm not alone." And I said, "No,
nope,
you're
not
definitely
alone.
Not alone, regardless of what people want you to believe. You're absolutely not alone in this."
And I like how you break up then into the counties.
Yes.
And then the gal that kind of headed up our county, Hamilton County, has been communicating and sending out emails too. So that's really helpful, the local.
All advocacy is local advocacy at the end
yes.
of the day. And so getting to know your neighbors and your community members who might go to a county health department meeting with you or a school board meeting, just shaking hands with them, exchanging contact information to stay engaged on a local level can be really powerful. So we continue to do that at our meetings because our advocates seem to really value getting to know who is in their own county and who's making a difference in their community.
Well, I'd just like to... Any last things you want to say before we wrap this up? I really appreciate you being here and us able to just to air this. And I
yes.
know a lot of our listeners will be very interested.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be here. And I just want to assure people that the people's battle, our strength is in our numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's why as a voting bloc at StandForHealthFreedom.com, we come together as people who are standing up for bodily autonomy, for the ability to decide how we care individually for our own bodies. And so share this with your friends, join us on StandForHealthFreedom.com, and we will keep making a difference.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you for what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Holistic Integration is located at 8902 North Meridian Street on the north side of Indianapolis, just south of the I-465 loop. If we can help you to achieve better health, we'd love to hear from you. Connect with our office at 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048.
Join us again next week or anytime on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com for The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather.